The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, "This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for the household. And if a household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbour shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat. You shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. They shall eat the flesh that night, roast on the fire. With unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted, its head with its legs and its inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord. Throughout your generations, as a statute forever, you shall keep it as a feast. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven out of your houses, for if anyone eats what is leavened, from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day you shall hold a holy assembly, and on the seventh day a holy assembly. No work shall be done on those days, but whatever one needs to eat, that alone may be prepared by you. And you shall observe a feast of the unleavened bread, for on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a statute forever. In the first month, from the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven is to be found in your houses. If anyone eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwelling places you shall eat unleavened bread. Then Moses called all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Go and collect the lambs for yourselves according to your clans, and kill the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and touch the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. None of you shall go out of the door of a house until the morning, for the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to enter your houses to strike you. You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and for your sons forever. And when you come into the land that the Lord will give you, as he promised, you shall keep this service. And when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses.' And the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the people of Israel went and did so. So as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did."
Jenny, thank you very much indeed for reading that. I might have to point out the fact that you're a vegetarian. Very humble of you to come and read a passage that's full about killing lambs and a lot of blood in it. It's a very, very serious passage. Very serious passage indeed. And I want to start by doing a little bit of word association to kind of engage with ourselves, and a bit of engaging with the culture in which we live. With a bit of word association, we can engage with the culture we live in, but also just with ourselves and Christian culture as well. A bit of word association. I say Lent. What kind of things come to your mind? This season in Britain and much of the Western world, a season of Lent, and I won't say any more than that because I don't want to sort of shape what your thinking might be. So do call out any ideas, any thoughts you've got. Help me join in. Giving up chocolate. Excellent. Yeah, Lent, giving up chocolate. Sorry? Dieting. Pancakes. That's just outside, isn't it? Tuesday, Ash Wednesday, yeah. Why do we have pancakes? Sorry? What? To prepare for Lent. Okay, so what have they got to do with Lent? Pancakes? To use up the stuff in your house that you're not supposed to eat during Lent, like chocolate. Chocolate pancakes. So chocolate pancakes are definitely out, but definitely Tuesday before, you know, it all starts, you can. Yeah. What else comes to mind with Lent? That it? Sorry, 40 days. Nathan's on the ball. Palm Sunday. What's that got to do with Lent? Sorry, it's the end, is it? So I didn't know that. Thank you for that. Learning things all the time there. The end of Lent, Palm Sunday. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anything else? Sorry? Fasting. Someone said fasting over here. Yeah, so fasting. But where do you kind of pick that up from? From home. Right, okay. Fine, yeah. 40 days, Jesus in the wilderness, 40 days. I guess there might be something to do with Jesus fasting for 40 days in the wilderness and Lent. Yeah, good. Thank you very much indeed for engaging with Lent. I went on the internet and I did a search for Lent, and most of the stuff on there was so religious. I was looking for some pictures, maybe an advert to show you, commercial, and it was so religious. I really didn't want to go there. I think the most humorous thing was a T-shirt you can buy, which has on the front, "I survived Lent." You can proudly walk around with that if you wish. You see, I didn't order one. We'll come back to this whole theme later on, okay? Well, just hold those things in your mind, in your thoughts, and we'll come back later on. Exodus, to come back to you tonight, is history. Okay? It's history, but I hope that you've not found it a history lesson. Sometimes I love history, but sometimes history lessons can tend to be a little bit boring, can't they? I hope you've not found it a history lesson. Tonight we actually come to the biggest event in the entire Old Testament. And some of us here are familiar with it. It's actually key to understanding or unlocking the whole Bible. Okay, so if you are unaware of it, I'd invite you and encourage you to listen in this evening. It might be one of the most important things that you ever get to hear. It might just be one of the most important things you ever get to hear. If you've ever questioned two seemingly opposite things, God's justice and anger and judgment with God's mercy, if you've ever questioned, well, how do those two things come together? Well, again, listen in tonight, because this will help bring those two together. If you've ever been tempted to think that our sin, that is, our rebellion against God, or God's anger with us because of our sin, is not that important, or it doesn't matter, then seriously, listen in to what Exodus has to say. God's people were slaves. Pharaoh wanted to keep it that way. The Lord planned to free them, and in every way, last week, God outgunned Pharaoh and all Pharaoh's gods as plague after plague after plague swept through the land of Egypt. Pharaoh was stubborn. He kept on sticking his heels in, and it led to one more plague. Chapter 11, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, "Yet one more plague, or one plague more, I will bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will drive you away completely." It's going to be that bad that he's so fed up with you, he's going to drive you away. He's going to throw you out the land. He's going to shove you out and push you out of the land. He's going to change his mind and absolutely and completely. It's going to be a horrifying plague. And it is a horrifying plague. Look on to verses 4 to 6 of chapter 11. So Moses said, "Thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on the throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle, there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there has never been, nor ever will be again." It's horrifying. I'm the fifth child of six. I'm the third son. But that doesn't kind of relieve the distress that this would bring, does it? There's no comfort in being the third son or the fifth child. You know, you just got to put ourselves in, put yourselves in the position where this was happening. Or just imagine your own family. Are you the eldest? Your brother, your sister, who is the eldest? Your parents, your nieces, your nephews, your own uncles and aunts and the like. And then multiply that amongst your friends, your network at school or at uni, the people you work with. It's horrific, isn't it? Absolutely, devastatingly horrific. This tenth plague. The very, very heart of this tenth plague as it came, this terrible night, was the Passover. Okay? And tonight we're going to think about three things concerning the Passover. First of all, the Passover is about a substitute death. The Passover is about a substitute death. Basically, the Passover meal was a family roast. Okay? So look on to chapter 12 and to some of the words that Jenny read a moment ago for us. Verse 3, "Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the tenth day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if their household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat. You shall make your counts for the lamb." So they get this little lamb, and they're going to have a roast. The lamb had to be a perfect lamb. Look at verse 5, it had to be a perfect specimen of a lamb. And if you look on to verse 6, well, what happened to it? Look at verse 6. It lived in the family home for 2 weeks. That is, just long enough for the children to name it. Just long enough for it to become, yes, a pet. You know, bleating around, and then to cuddle it, give it some milk, coochie coo it, pat it, name it Buttons. All right? And then after those 2 weeks, it was slaughtered, killed. And then his blood was daubed on the doorpost of the family home there. It was roasted. And then they ate it on that Passover night. So it's a serious little event that goes on there. See, the Lord was passing through in judgment. That's why it was so important that they put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost and the lintel of the door, because the Lord was passing through in judgment. Look at verse 12. "For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord." I am the Lord. The only hope as the Lord passed through was that he would pass over some houses, but only the homes where the lamb's blood was daubed and painted on the doorposts and on the lintel of the door. Look at verse 13. "The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." That's where their name comes from, Passover. The Lord will pass over. Pass over the homes where the lamb had been killed as a substitute. That's exactly what happened. Look on to verse 29. At midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where someone had not died. There was not a house where someone had not died. And that was true. That was true for the Egyptians' homes. That was true in a very real sense for the Israelite homes as well. It's just that it was the lamb that had died in their homes instead of the firstborn. In every home, there had been a death, either the death of the firstborn or the death of the pet lamb. You can imagine the scene, can't you, in homes across Egypt, you know, the next morning, you know, rebellion against God, because that's what was going on here. Rebellion against God had been punished in every home. A death had happened in every home, in some it was the utter anguish, the death of the firstborn. Why the firstborn? Well, symbolic that everyone else who came from that womb also deserved to die. It's symbolic that everyone deserved to die. In others, the utter relief through the death of the lamb that had died. Imagine being there. Imagine it if you're a firstborn. Or imagine it if you're a father, or a mother, or a brother, or a sister of the firstborn, hearing the cries of desperation sort of echoing out and going out into the night, all around you in the night air there in Egypt. You can sort of imagine that sort of situation, wondering, I mean, your home, yes, you've eaten the lamb, and yes, you did paint the blood on the doorposts of your house, and you're kind of there in bed, and just you're thinking, well, will it do the job? You know, is the Lord passing through my house, or is he going to pass over my house? You can imagine the situation, the fear that arises within you, and you find yourself welling up with a prayer, an intense prayer, an earnest prayer. Please, please pass over me. And in the morning in your home, there's relief. There's relief because you are all there still. Maybe you, or maybe it was your brother or your sister, or your father. It's great relief. And you know, as you look back on the night before and you realize it's not because of the intensity of the emotion. It wasn't because of the intensity of your prayer. It wasn't because of the intensity of anything. It's because you simply trusted and killed the lamb and put its blood on the doorpost of your house. Simple faith. That's what saved you, not the intensity of faith. Simple obedience, simple faith, simple trust. Dunk early on was talking about the movie and about you know, whether our lives are planned, or you know, what about fate and all the rest of it. And then he ended by reading that those words from the Bible. The Bible doesn't believe in fate. It believes in a sovereign God, a God who made everything, who made you and me, and who cares about you intimately and knows our lives. It is no accident, what Dunk said and quoted from the Bible earlier on, it's no accident that you're here tonight. It's no accident that I'm here tonight. It's no accident that we're looking at this passage of the Bible tonight. It's no accident, I don't think, that the Lord would call any of us here tonight who don't yet trust him to trust him tonight with simple trust. That his anger may pass over you. And we'll come on to how that ought to happen as we carry on looking a little bit more at this Passover. You see, the event pointed forward. It pointed forward to and helps us understand an even more terrible and even more important event. The New Testament introduces Jesus Christ not simply as the firstborn. It's really fascinating. He's introduced in, if you're taking notes, John chapter 1 and verse 14. He's introduced as the only son of the Father. The only son of God. But not only is Jesus Christ the Son, later in that very same chapter, in John chapter 1, verse 29, he is introduced as the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. He's the Son and the Lamb, both those things that were going on that Passover night. That 10th plague night, a son, the eldest dying, and a lamb dying in his place. I mean, and here it comes, fulfilled in Jesus, the only Son of the Father, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. You see, the twist in the New Testament is the Son dies. But it's the Son of God. The perfect one, without blemish. He comes to die for you and me. He's crucified at the time of the Passover. Again, taking notes, John 19 verse 14 makes that absolutely clear. It was the time the Passover lambs were being killed. That's when they strung him up on the cross. What's more, like the lamb, they did not break his legs. That's a direct quote of John 19 verse 33. They didn't break the lamb's legs back in chapter 12 of Exodus. And it's all spelled out very, very clearly in a verse we'll come back to later on. 1 Corinthians 5 verse 7, Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. So do you trust him? Kind of mustering up some sort of emotion. Do you simply trust Jesus to have died for you? And God's anger on you because of your rebellion against him to pass over you. Passover. Secondly, a memorial meal. It's about a sacrifice, a substitutional death. But secondly, Passover is a memorial meal. Back here in Exodus chapter 12. See, even before the 10th plague actually happened, the Lord planned how the rescue from it would be celebrated. It's a little bit like Wales planning now how we are going to celebrate the winning of the Six Nations. Okay, open top bus, already planned, already set up. We're going to go for it. We're going to win the rest of our matches. A bit of a shame with the French match there, and all the right people are going to lose. And already at the beginning, before the event, I see the Irish are laughing. Oh, we'll take the Irish. See, even before this event takes place, God is already planning the victory celebration ceremony that the people are going to remember for generations to come. And it's interwoven together. He tells them to get the Passover together. And interweaved with all of that, he's telling the future generations on how to sort it. Already planning the celebrations. Got the open bus top there and all the rest of it. The instructions are how to celebrate the Passover there are to be followed every year. So look at chapter 12, verse 14. This day shall be for you a memorial day. Going to remember it, a memorial day. You shall keep it as a feast of the Lord throughout your generations, as a statute forever. You shall keep it as a feast. And then verses 24 and 27, you shall observe this rite as a statute for you and for your sons forever. And when you come into the land that the Lord will give you, as he promised, you shall keep this service. And when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses. And the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Well, you would, wouldn't you? Bow your head and worship. Awesome, holy God, he saves his people. And so it's said as a memorial, generation after generation of children grew up remembering. Children are inquisitive. Keep asking questions. Are we nearly there yet? That's the first one they start asking when you leave the drive and you're going, you know, at 500 miles on holiday. And we can imagine the questions and the conversations around the Passover. I think the most heart-wrenching and the most obvious question has to be this. Dad, why did we have to kill buttons? That's got to be it, doesn't it, for a child? It's got to be the most obvious, I mean, the most heartbreaking thing in any family. How you remember yourself when you were smaller, some, you know, if you've not got children, death of your first pet. You know, I remember sitting in our kitchen with one of my children, one of my daughters, daughter who's not present, and so that, you know, don't embarrass the one that is here. His daughter was off sick, and so we were sat there having our lunch together while the others were at school. And a bird sort of missed its you know, flying went bang into the window. The kitchen went, soup everywhere. We went out and there was this little bird. And I picked it up and its little legs twitched and it died in my hands. It was weeping and, you know, we buried it. And we read the Bible together, a passage where Jesus says, not even a sparrow dies without the Lord knowing, you know, it comforted her. We went through all of that. And then I carried in a bit of work, and later on in the afternoon she came down with a little poem, but it was entitled "What Really Happened." It's the most fantastic poem that I've ever read. I keep that in my bedside table. The children, death is a frightening thing. The little lamb dies. They're going to ask, why did the lamb die? Why did the lamb die? Just got to know him. The family are going to be remembering, aren't they? They're going to be remembering that rebellion against God, and it's going to be very visual and very emotional, is extremely serious. Our sin is extremely serious. And they remembered that God's judgment is very real. The lamb died. And you imagine Dad saying in the situation, we should have died. We should have died. But God said that if we killed Buttons, our substitute, we would live. And so the family remembered God's astonishing and amazing mercy. Thousands of years later, Jesus shared the Passover with his disciples. Just keep your place there in the book of Exodus. Turn on with me to the book of Luke, page 1062 in the church Bibles. Here's Passover. This is Jesus in the kind of moment that we've just been thinking about from a family situation way back when in Exodus. It's Passover, and Luke makes it absolutely clear it's Passover. Luke 22 and verses 7 and following. Then there came the day of unleavened bread on which the Passover had to be sacrificed. Luke 22 verse 7. So Jesus sent Peter and John saying, go and prepare the Passover for us that we may eat it. They said to him, would you have us prepare it? He said to them, behold, when you've entered the city, a man carrying a jar will meet you. Follow him into the house that he enters and tell the master of the house, the teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? This is all about the Passover. Verse 12, and he will show you a large upper room furnished, prepare it there. And they went and found it just as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover. Don't have to keep on saying it's the Passover, but Luke does. And so it goes on. Verse 15, Jesus said to them as they gathered, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before what? Before I suffer. Before I suffer. It's Passover, but Passover with a difference. See, from now on, it was going to be a meal that celebrated a greater rescue. The Son of God is the Lamb of God, who died as our substitute. So Jesus changed the Passover into the Lord's Supper, a meal in which you remember Christ, our Passover Lamb, has been sacrificed. That's what verse 19 and 20 really say. Jesus took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So instead of not eating lamb now, we're eating some bread. A bread that's to remind you of my body, says Jesus, and my death for you. Verse 20, and likewise the cup after they had eaten, saying, this cup that is poured out for you in the new covenant is my blood. So he says that we're going to drink some wine now, and that this wine is to remind you of my blood. A lot of blood was mentioned in the reading that Jenny read for us earlier on. My blood, says Jesus, shed for you, poured out for you. So, like the Passover, the Lord's Supper, it's a powerful meal, isn't it? There's power in repetition. Now, advertisers know this, don't they? You know, all sorts of things, you know, the real thing, Coca-Cola. I mean, I could just think back through all my life and all the adverts I've learnt off by heart and what they all relate to. Vorsprung der Technik, you know, Audi, Gillette, the best a man can get. They just reel them off the top of my head. You know, the advertisers know repetition's really important. Like, there's still these things in our brains and in our heads. You know, only the lady, you know, the lady loves milk tray. They're all popping in my head all over the shop now, aren't they, for the rest of the talk? Some churches celebrate the Lord's Supper every week, some once a year. We have it kind of in between, once a month. And there's power in repetition. And the Passover was to be there every year, so that as folks grew up and as folks lived their lives, they were remembered every year what it was the Lord had done for them. There's also power in ritual. The ritual of the Passover and the ritual of the Lord's Supper is the ritual of a meal. It's powerful. It uses all the senses, you know. We see, we touch, we smell, we taste, we hear the explanation, we commune with God, we fellowship with one another, the other members of the family. It is incredibly real, isn't it? I brought some illustrations with me. Just get a little plate out here. Perhaps, Alisa, why don't you come and help me there? Open the bottle of wine. I knew Alisa wouldn't say no to that. All right, you fill the glass with some wine there.
Fill it.
No, that's enough. Yeah, bread. Smell that. Smells good, yeah? Smells very good, doesn't it? Smells better, yeah? Take that down there and get them smelling there. Smells good, yeah? And the wine, which way? Have you tasted some yet?
No.
Does that taste good? Pass the wine down there for everyone to have a little smell of it. Thank you, Lisa. Do sit down. You get the point there, don't you? It's tangible. It's real. I read somewhere that the sense of your smell is by far the best thing for your memory. If you smell something, the memories will flood back very, very quickly indeed. It's a meal. Touch, taste, and of course, yeah, like I said, there's the explanation of what it is. Jesus passed these things around at the mealtime, and he passes around the bread, and he says this, "Take this and divide it among yourselves, for I tell you that from now on I'll not eat and drink the fruit of the wine until the kingdom of God comes." He takes the bread, and when he'd given thanks, he breaks it and says to them, "This is my body, which is given for you." And then he passes the cup around, and he says, "This is the blood of the new covenant, my blood shed for you." A very, very real thing. And why do I get you? I mean, Tim, you needn't to pass all that bread round, that wine round. Well, I want us to get a feel for it. It's supposed to be visual, it's supposed to hit the senses. And why? Because our greatest danger, like it was for the Israelites, is that we forget. And God has provided the most wonderful meal by which we don't forget. By which we remember. We remember the seriousness of our sin. We remember the awesomeness of God's holy and his anger upon us because of our sin. And we remember with great joy the mercy of God, the astonishing kindness of God, who we eat the bread, drink the wine, that his son died instead of us. So we don't forget, but remember and are nurtured with these things throughout our lives. And, we remember the great joy, don't we? I've been spared. I've been passed over. When the final day of judgment comes, I will be passed over. Because I simply trust the Lord Jesus Christ and what he's done for me. Great confidence that it breeds in us. So, simple implication for us. When was the last time you shared in the Lord's Supper? You've been coming to Christchurch Central for a while? You joined us on a Thursday? The danger is we forget. And this is a means, Calvin the great theologian called it one of the means of God's grace. His mercy towards us, that he gives us this meal so that we don't forget, so that we treasure what he's done for us. So next time the Lord's Supper comes round, make sure you give it a priority. Otherwise we might forget. Might forget how sinful we are, and that'd be stupid. Might forget how angry God gets with sin. That's even more silly. Might forget God's love for us. That would be foolish. So Passover, a substitute death, a memorial meal. Passover, lastly, a new people. Come back to Exodus. The week around the Passover was another feast, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And bread made without yeast, a bit like pita bread. This festival helped them remember the original fast food meal, because that's really what was going on here. I mean, this is way before McDonald's ever appeared on the scene. But this really is fast food, isn't it? Look at chapter 12 verse 11. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belts fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover, because basically there's no time for the bread to rise, no point in putting yeast in it. You're about to get kicked out. So it's the fast food meal that you've got to have. So no time for putting yeast in the bread there. In the centuries that followed, the annual clearing of the house of yeast, leaven, became a family game. And I think this is probably where Tuesday and pancakes comes in, and cooking up, you know, pancakes together. And well, it became a family game. Verse 15, for 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove the leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats that is what is leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut out of the land. So getting the house clear of all the yeast and eating unleavened bread became the family game. But there's a deeper significance. Look on to chapter 13. Chapter 13 and verse 3 and following gives some more instructions about this Feast of Unleavened Bread. And if you look on to verse 9, it gives some deeper meaning to the whole event. And it shall be to you a sign on your hand as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. Is to remind the people of God's mighty act that night of the tenth plague, his strong arm when he saved them out of Egypt. He rescued them. And remember the great tussle that's been gone. Pete and Matt have been explaining it so well in these last few weeks. The great battle that's been going on, it's been going on between Pharaoh and all his gods and the living and only true God. And these guys on this one side have been slaves to this guy, Pharaoh, and all his gods. And God has come in and he's smashed all that lot to bits, and he's taken these people. They're now his. He's rescued them. They belong to him. And the Feast of Unleavened Bread is to help people, supposed to be there, to remember the mighty hand of God rescuing you, that you might become whose? God's. To remind them who they are, who they now belong to. This picture is taken up in the New Testament. Turn on, this is the last little time I want you to turn on to 1 Corinthians chapter 5, page 1149. And 1 Corinthians chapter 5. This was written to the early church in Corinth. The situation in the church there wasn't very good. If you look at verse 1, you'll find that there's some man in the congregation is sleeping with his stepmother, I guess, all right? You're horrified by that. It's happening in a Christian church. Paul says this is the kind of thing they ain't seen amongst pagans, and it's happening in the church. And what's even more astonishing is the church don't seem embarrassed, ashamed about it at all. You think, if you want to be like a Corinthian church, this is terrible. Absolutely horrific what was going on there with his church. Paul says to them, the writer says, that they really ought to weep and put it right. That's verses 3 to 5. But the point is this: something was wrong about the church. There was something wrong in the church. There was something that shouldn't have been there, like yeast in the bread during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And it was time to clear the house. It was time to clear the church, for members to clear their lives of the old sinful way of behaving. And that's exactly what Paul picks up on in verse 6. Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? You know, you think it might just be one fella, but it's going to be all of your ruin. It's going to leaven the whole lump. Cleanse out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump of dough, as you really are unleavened. See, the church should be unleavened in that sense. Why? For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. So it was time to clear the home out, the church out, from a sinful way of behaving. Why? Because for Christ our Passover lamb has been sacrificed. Our substitutes died. We've been rescued from sin. Sin no longer owns us. We're new people. Who belong to who? We belong to God. So be who you are. That's what verse 8 says, isn't it? Let us therefore celebrate the festival, not with the old leaven, the leaven of malice and evil, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. You should be different. Be who you are. Be a new people. Be God's people. It's the season of Lent, which is where we began. It's time to clear things up in church life. That's really where Lent comes from in a church calendar. Not our kitchen cupboards of yeast or chocolate, but to clear the cupboards of our lives, of ungodly ways of behaviour. To take an audit, perhaps. Now, let me throw out some ideas for you. I think it's worth our while taking an audit on our lives and who we are and our behaviour. It might be good to take an audit just thinking about the environment. Our greedy habits in the West have appalling effects on people in other parts of the world. Is that godly? Is that right? No, we're new people. There's great reams of laws in the Old Testament. Be like God, He's a generous God. Care for the poor and needy. Might be appropriate to just think about our intakes, things we spend our money on, the way we live, work. Our places of work can so easily become institutionalized in some way or other. Institutionalized what? Remember the police force, the Metropolitan Police, being slammed for institutionalized racism. And if it was right, then sure, they should have been. But all of our workplaces will become institutionalized in some way. What is it that you need to stand out and be different on? And not be institutionalized, but to be a person of God in your place of work. Where do you need to stand out as different? To get rid of the old unleavened, and be the old leavened bread and be unleavened. That's the metaphor. Church, how is your service going? Or your relationships? Or your generosity? Family. We're called to honour, respect our parents. Husbands and wives are called to submit and to sacrifice. How's that going? Children are called to obey parents. Parents are called not to exasperate their children. We need to think these things through. Friendships, gossip, kindness, forgiveness. How are those things going in our relationships with others? And then there's the personal. What we watch, what we read, what we think, what we speak, what we eat, what we drink, how much we drink. How is the Bible fitting in with your life at the moment? Giving up chocolate? Are you reading the Bible? Giving up chocolate? Are you praying? Doing positive things? Why? For Christ our Passover lamb has been sacrificed, and we are new people. We're God's people. What a great encouragement to be who we are. Let's pray.